This is the E-Commerce Brain Trust, a podcast about building momentum online for established consumer brands. Join our hosts and their expert guests for high-level conversations about e-commerce strategies, trends, and innovations. Access our brain trust and boost your brand's e-commerce potential.
Well, hello and welcome back to the E-Commerce Brain Trust podcast. I'm your host, Kiri Masters, Head of Retail Marketplaces and Retail Media Strategy at Acadia. And today I am joined by Ash McMullen, e-com lead at Advantis Health, the company that manufactures the brands Mlactin, Carousel, and more. With 15 years of e-commerce experience rooted in Amazon expertise and D2C, primarily in the beauty, health, and personal care categories, Ash has been growing her knowledge with each new capability and feature that Amazon launched. One of the most rewarding experiences of Ash's career has been scaling the growth of a third-party seller 3P company over the course of 10 years in the beauty category. Starting with just 10 brands, Ash had the privilege of expanding the portfolio to over 80 brands, managing a catalog offering of over 2,000 SKUs. And finally, for the last 2 years, Ash has had the pleasure of being part of the Advantis Health team, leading the growth of e-com in the brand portfolio. During this time, she has contributed to double-digit growth year over year with the collaborative effort of her team and agency partners. Welcome to the show, Ash.
Thank you, Kiri. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah. So we were hanging out together for a little bit at the Etail West event in Palm Springs. Not a bad place to be in late February.
Not at all.
Yeah. And you actually presented a case study at the event, which sadly I missed because I was already on my way home. But I wanted to make sure that we were able to do a recap with you of that case study, because I think there's a lot of Amazon specific sort of nuggets in there. I did see your slides and excited to dig into that. But before we get into that case study, as the e-com lead at Advantis Health, I heard a little bit about the scope of your role from that bio, but maybe what does that include day to day, and which teams are you interacting with, and what is your sort of like metrics for success in that role?
Definitely. So put simply, everything Amazon and e-commerce or anything with a .com attached to it falls within my purview scope. The majority of our e-commerce business at Advantis, which encompasses 6 different brands in the personal care and health and beauty categories in our portfolio, majority of our e-commerce business is done on Amazon, and kind of all areas of that, from like operations to marketing to forecasting, and working very closely with like all of our brand leads on our marketing team, but as well as supply chain and our finance team. And we have a great Amazon agency partner that I work closely with on all the details of our tactics and reporting our performance with our brand leads. And then the best part really is like that cross-functional relationship with our finance and supply chain teams. They've taught me a lot in the last 18 months. And as an avid learner, I love that, and kind of, you know, bringing all of that together in this nice synergistic environment is fun.
That's great. Well, if we've got time in the episode, we should talk a little bit more about the supply chain and finance teams, because that's actually an area of friction, I think, for a lot of e-com and marketplaces folks out there. It's like, they don't get it. So what led you into this role career-wise? What were some of those? I know that you were agency side for a little bit as well. What's been that trajectory like in your career to date?
Yeah, so I feel like a lot of us kind of get into e-commerce by accident. It wasn't like what we set out to do, and when we were studying business or whatever we were studying in college. I started in a family business. My father, when I was growing up, was a beauty supply distributor. And when Amazon opened the platform to 3P sellers, he made that shift from physical to digital. And at the time, I was working in the hospitality industry, and he asked me if I would be interested in working with him to scale his business on Amazon. And that was a little over 15 years ago now. And back then I was very intrigued by the idea of working from home and jumped in feet first and never looked back. And after 10 years, I eventually became really passionate about the marketing aspect of Amazon and really wanted to learn more about DSP in particular during that time. So that's when I made the shift from there to the agency side, and then was presented with the opportunity about a year after that with the opportunity to go to Advantis Health and lead their e-commerce business, where I could bring together that in my historical knowledge of Amazon and my more fresh marketing experience and drive really meaningful growth in that company and get to work closely with the brand leads on developing that holistic strategy that blended kind of how they were growing the brands through the like off Amazon marketing efforts and how Amazon could play a role in that and really bring this to life. And it was really exciting for me at the time because my position that I have now hadn't existed prior, and which really speaks to the overall growth of e-commerce at a macro level. And one of my favorite parts of Advantis is having the opportunity to work with really smart, inspirational women in leadership in the CMO and CEO roles. And it's made a very lasting impact on my life, both professionally and personally.
That's awesome. So such a great story. And yeah, I agree. There's no like singular path to get into e-commerce, which I think is really great because everyone comes with a slightly different perspective and you go to these events or you speak with people and we all have a little bit of a different perspective, given that some people have come from sales, some people have come from shopper marketing or category management, some people have come from having their own e-commerce business or being in a family business. So it all kind of adds to a pretty diverse background and diverse experiences and ways of looking at things.
Yeah.
So this case study that you presented at eTail West, let's dig into that now. And it was about the evolution of an Advantis Health brand called Triple Paste. So give us the 50,000 foot view of the story here, and then we can get into some specifics.
All right. So the 50,000 foot view, Advantis acquired Triple Paste back in 2019-2020, and it was a bit of an outdated brand. It didn't have a big presence on the digital shelf, which actually worked to the benefit of it at first, because our priority number one was updating the packaging and really repositioning the brand and transforming it from, you know, the inside was great, but we needed to transform the outside. And so the brand leads took this, what was an outdated, maybe out of touch package and turned it into this more engaging illustration of mother and baby on the front of pack today with very vibrant colors that really pop both like on the physical and digital shelf. And from there, we then had to establish our growth goals for the brand and define what success looked like. So we have this brand, where do we want this to go and how do we want to get there? And defining really what success looked like became really important and probably the most challenging part of that, you know, setting those expectations and being confident in our ability to meet or exceed those goals. So looking at the category, analyzing the competitive landscape, establishing a budget, what do we expect to drive with that budget? And really our focus became driving this on Amazon and using that as kind of our launch pad for greater distribution and greater growth. And as a marketing team, once we align those goals with our finance and supply and leadership teams, then we could get to the strategy, or what we call like the fun part of it, and where that's where we put forth like a full funnel approach to achieve our goal of becoming number three in the diaper cream category as a means of like market share measurement on Amazon.
And so Triple Paste, just it's a diaper rash cream, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Triple Paste is a very, it's the most efficacious triple diaper rash cream that is on the market. We have all this, we have all the clinical studies, and it's pediatrician recommended. We have the National Eczema Association seal. So the, you know, that what's inside the bottle is really good. So we implemented a full funnel approach, and starting with that upper funnel of answering the question, you know, how and where do we meet moms and dads, for that matter, parents, before baby number one. Triple Paste is a very in the know brand, where if you know, you know. And we had heard a lot from our shoppers, like, that Triple Paste was the last resort. It was what parents tried last after trying everything else that hadn't worked. And so in approaching the strategy, we knew we had to meet our shoppers prior to baby number one. And that really helped set up the narrative that we had to have internally about shifting our KPI tracks away from ROAS, away from the traditional, what we have learned to be those key KPIs that everyone loves and it's really hard to let go of, but sometimes it's necessary. And it was funny because one of the themes at eTail was a lot about storytelling from brands to shoppers. And I think that theme can really come to light internally as well when developing these strategies. So taking our overall goal of becoming, you know, as far as a market share measurement on Amazon, number three in the diaper cream category, and using that as our overarching goal for what was a 2-year plan, and from, you know, relaunch to readings at the end of 2023, and using that full funnel approach coupled with, you know, brand new product detail page content. There was some innovation that, you know, we launched in 2023 that helped further drive the momentum of the brand, and a brand new brand store launch that we totally revamped and did, and really just closely monitoring like what our new measurements were. So we did keep ROAS in our KPI metrics. However, we set the goal of ROAS going down. So We said, you know, our ROAS is going to go from a 3.5 to 5.0 down to a 0.5 to 1.5. And we are going to make this tactical decision or strategic decision that, you know, not all KPI need to go in a specific direction in order for them to make sense for the overall strategy. And that was, you know, we used that with market share and saying like, okay, we know we're going to be reaching this part of, you know, the funnel, and then setting very specific parameters around, you know, we're going to be driving incremental traffic. We know our conversion rate is going to come down. Watching that to see, okay, are we sustaining these increased levels of traffic, but seeing our conversion rate creep up? Okay, now we know like our mid and lower parts of the funnel are starting to work more efficiently. And as we saw that shift, then it allowed us for, you know, it allowed the stress or like, you know, what's attached to ROAS to just be lower. And as long as these other pieces were moving up, and we're seeing this halo effect of, you know, other products in the Triple Paste line increase in like overall sales, we could see that flywheel was working and our strategy was working. And it really gave a lot of support to the overall narrative of that upper, that full funnel approach of, and being able to spend those ad dollars in a in the upper funnel. It was, which is really exciting because it's not always the easiest thing to do when proposing that strategy.
Yeah. And so I just want to dig into that for a second, because I think this is like, you know, ROAS is this, you know, security blanket that a lot of marketers have, because people understand, like, my finance team's going to understand it. Like, the decision makers are going to understand it. And we can compare it to Meta ads and whatever. But I love that you plan for it to go down. That's great, because it was an awareness play and you recognize, you know, the push and pull of growth versus profitability. Something has to give. So what metrics, like you said, market share and getting to number three in the category, were there any metrics that you looked at as sort of leading indicators of getting there?
Yes. So that was traffic. We looked at traffic. We looked at conversion. From a DFP side, we looked at our new to brand percentage. That wasn't the highest on the list, because again, you're really, I like to look at more broad metrics versus the specific attributed metrics, because there are so many things that we don't know. We don't, like, we get a little bit from AMC and like the customer path to purchase journey, but it's really, there's a lot of unknowns of, you know, even if, you know, they saw it at Target but bought it on Amazon, you know, there's mm-hmm. things that happen that all work together that we might not have line of sight to. So mm-hmm. and some of this really comes about with working closely with your other teams, you know, having, you know, you mentioned profitability, like working closely with our finance team is something that I value greatly, because we talk about the different things of, like, you know, funding coupons if we're going to participate in Prime Day, mm-hmm. and building a forecast around that, so we have an understanding of what our profitability will look like, and then building out the plan of, like, yes, we're going to, you know, we know that there's going to be greater traffic on those days, and building that case of, like, why or why not to participate in it, and having really an open dialogue where there's an opportunity for finance to learn the e-commerce language and for e-commerce to also learn the finance language, and really seeing all aspects of that and using that as part of the strategy, where we're looking at, you know, our overall spend and our overall sales as a whole, and getting into that, like, tacos realm, which also is not perfect, but it is a good leading indicator of, you know, what your, if your strategy is, you know, successful or not.
Great.
So the outcome after year number one, so from 2021 to the end of 2022, or the end of 2021 to the end of 2022, the overall brand sales on Amazon grew 3x. And we still hadn't achieved, we had gotten into the top five in the first year after executing this strategy. And then year number two, so end of 2022 to the end of 2023, is when we really leaned further into the full funnel. You know, like, year number one was kind of proof of concept, where we got, like, our toe into the upper funnel and got that initial buy-in, and it's like, okay, this works. Now we're going to further lean into it and get to that number three spot. And in 2023, by the end of the year, year over year, we had grown 1.7x in sales on Amazon, and we achieved, it took us till November, but we solidified that number three spot in market share. So
well done.
Thank you. we were very proud of that. I went back and forth on whether to round the 1.7 to 2 or not, and I decided not to, because it was still, like, we had still exceeded our goal, and yep. it we were we were very happy with it.
Excellent. What happened during that process that was, would you say, were like the key elements to the success story? Like looking back in hindsight is 2020, but what were sort of the handful of actions or things that you did to make the relaunch successful?
Content, content, content.
It's one thing.
I can't say that word enough. Content is so important. when we were putting all of this together, you know, you can get your whole budget approved and get through that whole process. And if you're driving traffic to a product detail page that is lackluster or not engaging and doesn't have fresh creative, you're not going to maximize conversion, and you're not maximizing like the efficiency of all your ad dollars. So high quality content that where we were going to drive our traffic was a really high priority in our strategy. And also I would say proper variation strategy was really important in this. We have two like categories of sizes. We have the smaller sizes in tubes, and then we have larger sizes in tubs. So at first they were all variated on one product page together. And then we had made the decision to separate them and put the tubes on one page and the tubs on a different page. And it gave a better shopper experience because the shopper wasn't overwhelmed when they got to a page and had almost like decision fatigue where they didn't know which of the four to go with. But it also allowed us to kind of optimize different tactics specific for the different sizes. So that was one key of success there. And lastly, being nimble, just and not being so, you know, this is the tactic we picked, this is the strategy that we were going with, and not being so attached to that where, you know, when you're reading these results, it's not set it or and forget it. It's, you know, you're in it all the time, and you're reading the results, you're reading the category, you're seeing the, you know, how everything is playing out, and being able to optimize and be nimble was a really key part of that.
Another thing I wanted to dig into is this content, content, content. I love that you mentioned that. And, you know, of course, from a logic standpoint, okay, you're driving this traffic, you're expecting a worse return on it initially because you're driving awareness traffic to those product pages. And so we need to have good content that actually explains the features and benefits, and don't just try this last, try triple paste first and all the, you know, reasons. One challenge I see among e-com practitioners on the brand side is it's much harder to get buy-in into investment in content as it is for ads, because with ads it's like I can show a return on this, I can show you if it's going up or down, like what my path is to actually get a better ROAS if that is the objective. But content is like this weird abstract thing that you're asking someone to sign off on. How did you make the case, or what recommendations would you have for other people for making that case?
So it's very important. And it's also something that's not set and forget, right? So it's, you know, it also is something that takes a lot of time and intention around revisions. And, you know, we have a great, I joke and say, like, you know, I have a great consumer research pool around me between my husband, my sister-in-law, his kids, and, you know, everyone that we know and anyone that you can tap into of like looking at a preview of, you know, how would you shop this? One of the key things about really the revision process is looking at it on your phone. Like, we work on screens, so we sometimes fall into this ease of looking at something and revising something based on how we're seeing it on our monitors versus the majority of shoppers who are shopping on their phone. So that's something that we always kind of take a second breath and say, okay, we need to look at this on our phones as well and make revisions based on that. And And really, the getting buy-in part, we started talking about ad spend and marketing tactics hand in hand with content, where they're not separate anymore. It's, we're using this tactic to drive to this, where the shopper is going to see this. And that's what's going to drive conversion. So everyone loves conversion because it's a very tactile metric that is more simple to understand than most. So using that as the anchor to that conversation helps, where you need that hook of, and that content piece is the hook and the support factor of why this tactic or this piece of the strategy we believe will be successful. So having it as an encompassing conversation has helped with the education of like the importance of it. Not saying it's still easy to get a lot of budget approved for it, but the understanding of the importance is more so now than it has been in the last year or two.
Great. So this is like a relaunch. This is a good news story. It's a relaunch done right. Got all your ducks in a row. And looking back, a lot of things kind of seemed obvious. I'm sure it wasn't all obvious at the time. You put the plan together and you need to flex on that a little bit. What advice do you have for peers who are responsible for a brand launch or a relaunch on Amazon or other marketplaces?
Advice: prepare and be prepared. So you can do all the research, know your competition, know the category, think you know Amazon. And at the end of the day, it's still e-commerce. It is still ever-changing, and something unexpected will inevitably happen. And it's really important to kind of take that step, take a deep breath, and look at the bigger picture and be able to shift and be nimble. Don't be too attached to all the details of this beautiful strategy that you just put so much effort into. Inevitably, as things happen, you'll need to adapt. So, you know, prepare for the unexpected and everything will work out. And sometimes being nimble and changing something, even if it's last minute, you end up with a better result.
And what are you excited about in e-commerce right now?
I love this question. I'm excited about a lot of things, but I'm most excited about fresh talent in e-commerce. I'm really inspired by this education alliance that our agency is a part of, where they partner with Amazon and colleges and universities, and they co-teach marketing class with specific to the skill set of Amazon paid search. Wow. I had the opportunity to attend one of these classes and see the students present their strategies and performance, and they're fantastic. Our team has also benefited from this program. I hired a post-grad extern last summer and extended a full-time offer to him this year, and he's brought a ton of value to our team, and I'm really inspired by the next generation that's joining the e-commerce world.
Very cool. And is there something that you've changed your mind about?
Yes. No, this is kind of a tough question, but I think I've most changed my mind about the importance of like the level of knowledge and understanding of e-commerce within a company as a whole. And it's a little bit, I think this is kind of a simpler application of that for Advantis, because we're a leaner company in headcount, but you know, e-commerce existed in this world, everyone knew about it, but not necessarily all the things that make it tick. And that was just okay. And I changed my mind about that just being okay. And if we want to grow more meaningfully, it's not okay to just be okay. Like, we all need to understand this a little bit deeper together. And so I've changed my approach in meetings, where if there's a broader audience of other teams within the company and e-commerce has some airtime, I'm very intentional about what I prepare for that meeting and how it relates to the company in the bigger picture. you know, I pick what I want everyone's key learning or nugget to be that they take away and talk about that. Last year, I talked a lot about tentpole events like Prime Day, and from angles of planning and marketing tactics to supply chain to financial, down to, you know, timelines of when they were going to be ordering and forecasting the funding and all of these different variables. So, you know, my key takeaway was that tentpole events are important and these are all the reasons why. So like at different monthly meetings, I would talk about like the different component that was coming up and how that played into the bigger picture. And then by the end in August, that was really fun because then it was the results. So I had been talking about it since April, and, you know, some people could have been tired of hearing about it at that point, but there was something a little bit new and dynamic. And by the end, it was kind of exciting to share the results. And then, you know, this year, as we approach that timing, everyone has a little bit of a deeper understanding and a little bit more of an understanding of what to expect. So that's what I've changed my mind about.
Excellent. Well, Ash, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.